You are listening to the Vital MX Post-Race Show, presented by Decal Works.
Hello, and welcome to the Vital MX Post-Race Show, the third and final Triple Crown of the 2024 Monster Energy Supercross season. Is in the record books, St. Louis. And although the results don't scream chaos and parity, we had a clean sweep in both classes. Plenty of storylines emerged separate to the Triple Crown from Missouri, and we will get into all of that on this edition of the Vital MX Post-Race Show. Thank you to Decal Works, Beta USA, and Fox Racing. Of course, as we've said multiple times, buy a Beta, get some Decal Works graphics, and then buy some Fox Racing gear. Do the trifecta. It's literally laid out especially for you. And those Decal Works graphics will truly shine on no matter the bike that you own. Head to their website, pick out a graphics kit that suits you or whatever you like. They will cater to you as if you are a factory rider. It is an exquisite service. Ranted and raved about by so many people. Purely because they leave no stone unturned, no matter if that's for product or the customer service. So Decal Works, thank you to them for their support of this podcast. I am your host, Lewis Phillips, joined by Michael Lindsay. Hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Exciting news for you. You ready?
Yeah.
This is, for the first time this year, this is the Everything is Awesome podcast.
Oh no, I hate these.
Yep, we're back.
No, no,
we're
no,
back.
No,
took
Lewis,
12 rounds.
No, nope.
We're back.
Nope, nope. I'm gonna turn this off right now. If we're going back to the Everything is Awesome podcast,
everything is awesome, and also no, everything Lord, is fact. Can't. We want no speculation. Words like would, should, would,
could,
banned from this podcast. No, no, no. It's more essentially, dear listeners, what I'm gonna do. Michael is a rendered irrelevant, because what this podcast now is me just going, in first place, we had Eli Tomac, and then in second place, Cooper Webb, third place, and then the podcast over.
Note for all listening, Lewis is upset because a writer is mad at him.
No. Everything is awesome.
This is an awesome podcast.
I don't know about you. Maybe you don't think that some things are awesome, and that's fine.
No, there's a lot I don't think is awesome.
Okay, well, I think everything's awesome, and not just everything is awesome, everyone is awesome, and you know what? I looked up, I rung the journalistic board of directors in a country, and I said, guys, you know what I think we should do as journalists worldwide? And they went, what's that, Lewis? We're on a first name basis, really personal. And I went, well, guys, I think we should just like not really try to like report or talk about stuff. We should just read results. And not really shed any speculation or thoughts or opinions or anything on any topic. And they went, you know what, Lewis? That's a fine fucking journalist. Oh, thank you. So they supported the Everything is Awesome podcast. So here we are. Yeah.
Okay, so end of show. Done.
Yeah. I really took that anecdote. Really, there was multiple characters, multiple voices. Really went down a path. No, it's great. It is great. Everything's awesome. It has to be.
Oh, God. moving on.
Yeah. So how are you? You good? You good? You awesome?
Good. No, I'm not awesome.
Don't know how long you're gonna last on this podcast.
Race today. I got terrible arm pump. Life's not awesome. It's great.
Arm pump like morning wood or whatever. Cooper Webb said 1 week ago.
I felt that actually crossed my mind once. I was going over a jump and I literally couldn't even take my hand off the bar to shake it out because I had such bad arm pump. I pictured Cooper Webb and just tried to grind it through just like Webb would, except without the style or the speed or the talent or, yeah, pretty much any of those things.
I'm sure you did awesome. And you know what? What an awesome quote from Cooper Webb last week as well.
I had to rewatch that.
Right. What are we doing first? Do you want to do Eli Tomac, the winner? Do you want to do Jet Lawrence, 8th overall? Do you want to do something else?
Oh, behind door number 1, 2, or 3. Let's go. Actually, let's, we can very easily go down the order after we have passed this one. Let's go for the the debate of the week I've seen so far on social media, Jet Barsha.
Well, first of all, how disrespectful of you to not go Eli Tomac. I wanted to go there first. How disrespectful of you, but okay, noted. We've all taken note. So yeah, everyone would have seen Barsha ran into Jet on lap one of the third main event. Jet went down hard, like it looked quite serious almost instantly. Honestly, amazed that he got up and got back on his bike almost now, 24 hours later. I cannot really believe that. I haven't watched a race back on TV yet, so maybe you can tell me this. So Barsha had Vince Freeze behind him, and based on how hard Barsha was braking coming into that turn, and the fact that it was Vince behind him, I would hazard a guess that Vince ran it in on him in the corner before, and Barsha was like, oh shit, and very defensive, and then accidentally became offensive.
On the TV, they don't have the corner before, and I don't know which one did. I heard from two different people, and again, this is hearsay, not stating this is fact. I heard
we can't do that.
Oh yeah, everything's awesome. I heard the Barsha ran it on Vince pretty hard, and my initial opinion, like, okay, you see Barsha and Jet connect, and I'm like, oh my god, one cut down, the other went in for the kill shot. We had like a near head-on experience, like shit. And then they replay it, and I felt for Barsha because my immediate impression was, okay, Barsha's going in at a tight angle, Vince is going in tighter than him, and my first thought was, I don't think Justin meant to do that. I think he was trying to get away from being murdered by Vince in the corner. So I've seen some people notice that and point that out, and from just what you can see on TV, that was definitely where I leaned. I'm like, okay, Barsha came in hot, probably should have estimated that those guys were battling, cutting down, but I think his mind was elsewhere of possibly not getting murdered. Because his line was tight, but you look in the background of the shot, and Vince's is even tighter coming in. I'm like, okay. So I definitely, at least from what I've seen, I lean towards, like, bad decision making on a little bit on Dustin's part, because again, unless all those guys went up top and just railed the top, like he was definitely coming in at a weird angle, but I think he was trying to save his own self. And I kind of feel like even based off his reaction, like how sorry he seems like afterwards, like the slow-mo on TV they showed of the connections, he hits Jet flails off the bike and hits the ground, and Justin is literally staring at him on the ground and isn't even riding away that aggressive. Like, he's just kind of riding and looking over, looking at Jet on the ground, and he puts his hand on his face and face palms, like, shit. Like, because he knows, like, based off the way he hits Jet and the way Jet flops down, that it probably hurt him in some way. And then you've probably seen the video of him after the race. He seems, you know, no word of what he actually said to him, but he seems extremely apologetic by his body language. You can tell he's trying to explain something to him, so I'm guessing he's telling him like why he was there. Like, I'm sorry, man. You know, I guess, you know, we've heard Barsha's he didn't really interview anybody after race. He wants to put out a statement this week, so I'm sure he'll break it down and explain it, because I feel like there's a lot more to it than just that blip of an instant we saw.
I believe it goes without saying, but I do wholeheartedly believe there was no intention from Barsha's side. There was none of that. It was just a racing incident that was initiated by whatever happened before that camera shot that we didn't see.
Yeah.
I do, like, there is no way that Barsha felt like he was going to make the pass on Jet there. Like, I'm sure he expected Jet to run the whole berm, not cut down as tight as he did. So I'm sure, like, I'm certain, we're all certain, right, that there was no intention from Barsha's side. I mean, that was obvious by his reaction, as you said.
Yeah, like I said, I think the reaction says a lot to it. If he was trying to go in for stuff like that early in the race of that caliber or something, I think the body language tells it all, that he didn't mean to be there when he ended up there. And yeah, the overall body language knows, like, yeah, it's like I said, there's a difference between like a rider doing that and probably seeming frustrated, like, oh, we connected, versus like, oh crap, like, I feel really bad that this happened. because it doesn't, at that point you kind of get a feeling of like, this was not purposeful, he was not going in for the kill shot.
Barsha and Ollie Stone went over to the Honda truck after the race and spent a fair amount of time there. So after the on-track apology, Barsha also then went and did an additional apology like 20 minutes after the race. So he was very much like wanted to get the point across that like, I am very, very sorry. So
now, I mean, how crazy the situation though with Jet, like, you know, of everything that could have happened, he is literally, you know, we'll find out this week, I guess. Well, maybe they won't say anything depending how minor it is. You know, if you go off, okay, maybe he, you know, seemed to be favoring the hand, maybe he broke something in the hand or whatever. He literally is sort of coming out of it best case scenario. It happened in the third main after two good results. So it affected his overall, but not as bad as if that was a standalone main and he's getting 21st, he loses the red plate to Webb. So does not lose the red plate, maintains a bit of a points lead, has a weekend off. Clearly he was able to ride afterwards. So even if it's broken, something, you know, that is definitely manageable, maybe take the week off and work on getting ready the week after. Potentially best case scenario for what could have been, you know, just slightly different format and night with race the next weekend, it could have been much more catastrophic to his championship.
Yeah, and funnily enough, exactly the same as Chase earlier in the year. He got hurt before Glendale, but then it was a weekend off after that as well. So both incidents kind of were timed as best as they could be, at least. I would honestly be surprised if Jet is like hurt as far as a break or a fracture, purely because he did ride afterwards. And I feel like maybe you could say it was adrenaline that kind of got him through that, but I would honestly be quite surprised if there is more to his injuries than just being battered and bruised. But yeah, time will tell. Honda usually release a rather thorough race report on a Monday morning, so I would imagine that there will be clarity in there. But yeah, crazy. And it's funny, like, to your point, on one hand, I'm like, yeah, lucky it happened at a Triple Crown because it minimized the damage. But then you could also say, if it wasn't a Triple Crown, maybe that never would have happened because, you know, like, maybe he just had the start that he did in the first main event or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't really know where I've always kind of got into the lucky when stuff like this happens at a Triple Crown. But now, randomly, I'm now, like, second-guessing that completely. We'll talk championship in a little bit once we've rattled through these other riders. So Tomac became the sixth winner of the year. Bounced back incredibly from where he was in Seattle and Indy. Although he was always riding well, it was just bad starts that made him irrelevant.
Yeah, because we had a few, like over the last couple of rounds, there's been a few times where you see him and you're like, it's there. He looks how he should on the bike. It was just down to truly bad starts and the fact that the field is deep. Like, you, if we keep saying you can't start 10th, like, it, you'd have to have a hellacious night of riding to start 5th and go to 1st. You can't start 10th and then make your way finally into that top 5 that's really good and expect to go any farther.
Yeah, and like I've said it a few times in recent weeks, like, practice, you can tell he's riding with intention and aggression, and like, you can tell he wants it. I'm sure that those sound bites of me saying those very nice comments were definitely clipped, or I would presume not, because that doesn't make a good story, does it? But he starts, we're back, first main, well, actually, not screw the first main event. His fake start in the final qualifying practice was good, but he wheelied like halfway up the start straight. So he didn't actually enter the first turn in a good spot. But the actual jump was like level with other riders. It wasn't like he was miles ahead like the final two main events, but it was better, encouraging. I wouldn't, after the practice start, I wasn't leaving the practice sessions going, oh, his starts are figured out, but there was definitely some encouragement there. First start was good, not great, he didn't hole shot, but it was good. And then, yeah, the second and third starts were unbelievable. I think it was the second one, he had like half a bike length on everyone halfway up the start straight. So who knows where those starts came from and where they've been. Maybe it's the opposite to Jet. Like I said last week, Jet said that he gets good starts when it's soft and tacky, but when it's hard pack, he struggles. Maybe Tomac is the opposite of that. Like, maybe it's that simple.
Soft and tacky. Well, it's kind of weird. Is what was it? Was it Kellen? I feel like it was Kellen's press day interview was asking Eli what he prefers these days, you know, rutted versus hard pack. And it's funny as Eli personally says he leans super towards like hard pack races these days. And that his 250 days, he loved soft rutted conditions. And now he likes hard pack races more and feels more at home at hard pack grounds.
Yeah, that definitely wasn't my press day interview.
Yours was different.
Mine was special. Mine was awesome. Everything is awesome. But no, like, yeah, good. His 100th podium, as we speculated last week, that was coming. So last week, the game was he was on 99 podiums. Does he get to 100? Do you want to know what this week's game is?
Does he get to 101?
I mean, I don't know. No. The games are better than that. I mean, I don't know if we should play games like this, because by asking the question, I just get shit on. But so he has now led 970 laps in the 450 class. Does he get to 1,000?
Yes.
By the end of this season? I don't know, 30 is a lot. Like, we just had a triple crown, and he led 28.
If we had another triple crown, I would say maybe, but with no triple crown left, the way it's been playing out, I lean towards a no, not the end of the season. I think he can get there, especially if he races next season. I think he will, of course.
If he races next season, obviously, but the game is by the end of this season.
So what'd you say, 971?
Needs no, 970.
So he needs 30 laps. It's not out of the question. I'm not going to waffle and go full 50-50. I lean towards no, but I give it like a 70-30, 80-20, somewhere in that range, with my bigger percentage being no. But I definitely, all it takes is, I mean, thinking of 20, like all it takes is one race with a gnarly start and, you know, putting down 20 or like if he has one big main this year out of these last five to the point he leads almost every lap or something, okay, then he only needs maybe 10. Could be doable. It's so start dependent.
Yeah, it's not as simple as last week's game where it was like, yeah, of course he's going to get one more podium.
Yeah, this one has way more variables. But like I said, start one big main could put this conversation as an almost yes in the next five. But I don't see it happening. Like, if it's just like, it's not going to come accumulative from like, oh, four laps here from this main, five laps from this main. It's going to have to be one big main lap haul to get it down.
I wonder, I mean, I'm scared to say this now because this gets me in trouble. I would like to ask Eli, and in no way is this me saying I'm going to attack him. I would like to ask Eli if this weekend off is actually the worst possible time, because he finally has momentum again. And now it's kind of been going to be reset to zero.
One I think that could be really interesting, and something I want to, if he's on press at Foxborough, I want to ask him, is this weekend he got to spend the most time behind Jet he has this entire year. I want to know how cognitive he was during that time, whether in person or going back to look at film, where he picked up that he's good versus Jet versus where Jet's better, whether we're talking about technique, whether we're talking about his bike, what he can take into the week off to learn. Like the group really puts their head down, if they're able to take away, you know, yes, there's the momentum side, but the learning factor. So I agree with you in the sense I would hate to be in a rider's position to have momentum and have a weekend off. That sucks. But I could also see, you know, set down, if you're that guy, turn this into the biggest positive you can. Take everything you can from that weekend, from footage, from what you saw, and see what you can do with it.
It is a bit of a surprise that his starts were so much better, because on press day, he didn't really seem to like be confident that it was going to be fixed. Like, he still seemed to be at a bit of a loss as to what the issue was with starts. So yeah, kind of a surprise that it turned around so drastically as well, because they weren't just good starts. They were as I like to call them, Mike Alessi starts. And also the other Tomac news to come out of the weekend is he's had an ankle injury for the last month, since Daytona, I believe is the timeline. So he's had a twisted ankle, I think it was, and that's made it difficult with balance.
Same side as the Achilles injury or no?
I don't know. And I'll level with you. I'm probably not going to find out. Like, I'm just going to level with you. But yeah, that now makes sense. Like, now, if we'd known that for the last couple of weeks, the analysis on the situation would be very, very different. But when you don't communicate these things, you leave room for speculation. But now, in hindsight, you have to wonder, if he didn't twist that ankle, would he be in the? Would he be more in the title chase at this point? Well, I mean, I guess he would be, obviously. But I mean, would this be like very much a realistic goal for him to win the championship with five rounds left?
I mean, you'd have to say at some extent you would lean towards yes, but I just don't know, based on the riding error stuff, how much better it would be. Like, yes, naturally it'd be better. I don't know if it'd be, I don't know. I feel a little doubtful that it would be, say, enough that he would be overhauling Webb right now, because we all know, like, Webb's hinted at dealing with an issue himself about riding through adversity. So clearly, you know, rumors around the Webb's dealing with something as well. So, you know, ifs and or buts.
Yep. Well, yeah, I guess we can't do that anymore.
Yeah, it woulda, coulda, shouldas. No, we're not doing that.
I would like to just put a little disclaimer on it. Last week, when I said Tomac needs one more, does he get it? It was just a discussion point. I was quite adamant that he would get a podium, but for some reason, people took me asking that question on a podcast, which, breaking news, that's kind of my job as a host, as like an attack. But it was obvious he was going to get a podium. What happened is, after Seattle, I updated my little spreadsheet and I saw that he was on 99 podiums since Daytona. And I was like, oh, I need a way to tell people that 100 is coming. I know, that'll be a good podcast topic, but can't do that anymore. So sad. Anything else on Tomac? He just looks like the first main event, he came out, he was railing the outside after the mechanic area, like, it just suddenly looked like Tomac. And I remember us saying this after Arlington, which also looked like Tomac. I almost feel like Arlington and St. Louis, both of those rides were better than any Tomac we saw last year. Maybe not better, but like more Tomac, if you get what I mean. Like, I felt like last year was a very strong, fast but solid Tomac, whereas the Tomac we've seen in Arlington and St. Louis was strong, fast, and a little looser Tomac, but in a good way. I don't really know if I'm articulating this well, but do you get what I mean?
Kind of. I mean, I still remember those moments from last year, but I know what you mean. The flashes, and again, that's why I think we were saying, like, it was a head scratcher. There was a couple rounds. I mean, the whole, basically, I'm trying to think of what round it was where basically he was back to, you could hear the bike wide open. The bike is backed in before he even got to the corner. Like, he's rode extremely well at a couple rounds this year.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is, I feel like this is more like Tomac, younger Tomac, than the more recent Tomac, which last year was more like a juggernaut at certain rounds where, although it wasn't flashy, it was like, you're just not stopping that.
If he hadn't won this weekend, and this is still something I'd like to ask him, you know, coming into this weekend, you know, going back to the beginning of the year when me and you were talking about potential winners, you know, we joked about the five being the average. I leaned towards we got to six, and I think we even kind of discussed like seven is possible because of like the last one missing is Anderson. You leaned more towards a 4-5. So up until this weekend, we were sitting on five, and the two missing were Anderson to Tomac. Flashback to, I'm drawing, Tomac 20, so let's see,
23. Well, I don't know what you're doing. What are you thinking?
Is 20, I'm having a really bad night. Is 22 Tomac versus Anderson for the title?
Yes.
Okay. Considering the win total, the haul of wins those two had that season, and then up until this weekend, neither of them had a win this year. You know, I'm always curious, like, how much the sport really progresses versus guys just click some years versus not. And something I would pose to both him and Jason is like, okay, this year, how do you feel like you're riding compared to 22 when you two dominated the season? Like, do you feel like you're at the same pace right now and that's just not good enough? Do you flashback and go, no, I feel more uncomfortable then? Like, I actually think if things were clicking, like 22 me is a little faster than I am right now. Things like that just kind of pop in my mind. Like, how much does the sport really progress versus how much of it is just the ebbs and flows of your career and your mentality and all that?
One more final point on Tomac. I went through and gathered his basically all of his starts from his career, just to kind of understand how bad the starts are this year compared to what is considered his norm. Just because, I don't know, felt like it was interesting. And what struck or jumped off a page to me, his starts really weren't good in 2022. Like, he came from behind to win a lot. Like, he came from seventh to win, sixth
and
to win.
And I guess, maybe to your point, when you're saying last season Eli was solid, I felt like 22 Eli was nuts because of he was coming from okay starts a lot of that season. And earlier on, like the wins he was doing early on, some of those came with some pretty impressive rides and speed.
Yeah, just you forget. I guess it's just hindsight, isn't it? Until it's staring at you black and white, you're kind of like, oh yeah. Like, yeah. Like, it kind of made me freak out less about his starts this year because I was like, oh, these are just standard Tomac starts. It's more the fact that what happened last year with his starts was an outlier and still, to be honest, makes zero sense how for 1 year he just became the best starter.
Actually, before we get off the subject, two things. One's just a quick statement. The other is a quick question for you. One, Math has mentioned this weekend he's hearing he's potentially Eli is not committing to outdoors, but going to race a handful, which doesn't shock me. Because if he is leaning towards racing next year, you know, he talked about being off coming into this year from the Achilles injury, the time away. I don't think, you know, some guys, yeah, maybe having a Supercross only season is good later in their career when they've had consecutive racing seasons. But him coming off the injury last year, I'm guessing sitting at home per se for the summer probably isn't the greatest idea in his mind. So him racing select races this summer does not shock me if he is prepared to come back for the next year. And that leads into my question. Seeing how elated he was on the podium, the monkey off the back, which I was surprised. I was wondering if somebody with his confidence level who's done it this many times would really feel that much relief from getting a win. And he seemed pretty genuine in that. Does getting a win, improving himself, he can still do it, and having that speed, et cetera, does this make him more likely to come back next year? Because my personal opinion is this makes it more likely that we see him for one more go.
Yeah, I lean towards that. But as I've said many times now, I feel like we've got the bonus Tomac year so many times that I feel like it's almost like being on a roulette table and I'm like, I'm not going to bet on it because we've got lucky so many years in a row, but at some point this streak has to end. So
I say that, but I think the one thing really playing into this as well is the whole, like, Yamaha doesn't seem to be breathing down his back about it, where if you were somebody in his position earlier in the season, when it was going rough up before this weekend, you had all this pressure to make a decision and you're just over it and maybe doubting yourself or just questioning if you want to do it anymore, I could see it being easier to walk away, but if they just wait to the day he says, fuck it, I want to do it. And especially kind of judging off his personality, I think that also raises that percentage chance where maybe other team situations would lower that chance because of the committal process.
It is just, yeah, it's crazy. Like, I can't imagine, I'd love to get a real answer on this. Like, if you're riding on a 1 year contract, say you're in the middle of your career and you're one-year contract. That is stressful, as many riders have said, yeah. But it's less stressful because you know that you want to race next year, you want a contract, you need to perform. So you're like, this is stressful, but the answer is I need to perform. In Tomac's situation for the last 4 years now, it's been like, it's basically been a one-year contract, but in a sense of like, it's all down to him.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really. So it's like, how am I putting this? Like, the question marks have come from with himself. So every year, it's just been like, do I want to do this again? Do I want to do this again? And I'd imagine that's got to be mentally tiring. Like, I know from decisions I've had to make, and I'm sure everyone listening to this can relate in some shape or form. Like, to make such a monumentous decision is tiring, and he's done this like 4 years in a row now. So,
what's weird, so I asked him that A1, and he genuinely, like, there was a very genuine response to it that he loves it this way. And I wonder if part of it is, like, you say that, like, weigh on you. I wonder if he is good at just shutting it out. Like, it doesn't weigh on him until the day he's like, don't want to do this again? Yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, I guess it depends what type of person you are. Some people can just, like, put that in a box and forget about it. Whereas other people, I'm that way.
It would bring a lot of stress, anxiety, uncertainty. Yeah. I think it is partially because maybe in his case, at least the way he made it seem, was he feels truly in control of what he wants to do. Like, there is no stress. And I think they put him in a situation where he really, as crazy as this sounds, like, they kind of have their other things with Webb and Cooper if they need to. Like, they really do leave it so up to him from the sounds of it that, yeah, it's at the end of the day, he can just pick to do it or not, and doesn't really matter if he says yes or no. The only person that matters to is him. Fuck it.
Okay, new question. New game.
New game.
So, Jet leads the championship, 8 points over Webb, 20 points over Chase, and 29 points over Eli.
Mm-hmm.
Say, hypothetically, Jet is out. Just removed, right? So then it's Webb, Chase, and Eli with that points configuration.
Okay.
If that is the situation, which is purely a game and hypothetical, just to be clear. But if that is the situation and it's Webb, Sexton, Tomac separated by 21 points, how much would you put on Tomac as the title favorite? Or still not so much. I take Jet out because I feel like if Jet's in this conversation, Jet is obviously everyone's favorite.
Yeah, yeah. No, I like the hypothetical.
I've got to clarify hypotheticals like fuck now.
Yeah, yeah. I lean towards, I'm trying to think of the whole racing season, everybody's current pace. I would go Webb as the favorite.
Yeah, I didn't know if after what we saw on Saturday night, if that was the situation,
it would boost. If we were doing, like, if we were back to doing our percentages last year, like we did, you know, if this was hypothetical, Jet wasn't in here, we're doing our percentages and we were doing them every week. Yes, this performance by Eli this late in the season, you know, I always think late season charge. Like, I look at the night, like, okay, Webb had some rough moments, but I saw some good. I felt like Chase had a night compared to, like, he had momentum last couple nights. I thought last night was in, then Eli coming on strong. My percentage for Eli would raise from the week before, of course, but I would put Webb as in control of this with that kind of spread.
Okay, and obviously, as it is with Jet 8 points clear, we are still set on Jet being the favorite.
Still set on Jet, but I mean,
the eyebrow raise.
The eyebrow raise. Does it? I mean, does it even waver your percentage at all? What just happened? Just the fact that it closed down, or are you 100% stamp it still? I shouldn't say what, near of us are ever 100%, like, you know, anything can happen.
I still would be very surprised if someone other than Jet wins this championship. Same. But obviously the likeliness has just gone up a little bit.
I guess the thing I still lean on, and you probably feel similar based on what happened last night. Yeah, it's a blip. Yeah, it reminds you that anything can happen at any moment. But the way I look at it is, I truly believe right now the only way he loses this title is a repeat of what just something similar to what just happened, but on a normal supercross where it blip, you know, he gets a 21st. I mean, like, I don't think this sets up anything where the other guys are able to sit there and slide their hands together and go, oh, we've got him on the ropes. No,
yeah, because
he's not on the ropes.
Realistically, if you put it in layman's terms, Jet, there's five races left and Jet still has the advantage. So you give Jet any sort of advantage, and I'm going to favor Jet.
Well, and then the tough one between, cool, Eli's had a good weekend, but Chase has been having good weekends, and Cooper's been having good weekends. Again, the same problem we've said earlier this year, and I kept saying, is none of these guys are consistently taking points out of Jet. They all did last night because it was Jet's fault, but on any other given night, it's not Webb or Eli or Chase two, three rounds in a row able to take points out of Jet. In the next five rounds, are the three riders we just mentioned going to take points each once out of Jet? Yeah, probably. But I don't see any of the three being in the position where, oh, they're going to start chipping away at him round after round. And awesome. I think you probably agree with me. One last one is Webb is the closest, but Webb is also the least likely to chip away from each round. It's like, okay, if Chase or Eli were on fire, like really on it, you could say, oh, maybe in the next couple rounds they could reel off some wins, but then they're just far enough out of it. Like,
Answer this one as well quickly. Who was the best rider on Saturday night, Jet or Eli?
I will lean slightly towards Eli. I will, because it's the combination. Jet was off on the starts. Eli, like, I play into the whole way the night played out and everything. I do lean ever so slightly Eli, but not by much.
Okay, yeah, just interesting question. I think we always like to play that game. I'm not answering it because people are too sensitive. Right, Webb, we need to rattle on because that was a very long time back discussion.
Yeah, it's a good podcast. It's a good fucking podcast.
Well, everything's awesome, including the podcast. Webb, always I said awesome. To him on press day, and I'm even more like conscious of this now, I feel like Webb's starts are low-key holding him back a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I
not
mean,
like it's not like he's starting 11th, but yeah. Like low key, I feel like for a little while now his starts have been 5th, 6th, 7th ish.
Yeah. He needs literally just a couple, like a spot, two or three more. I mean, what we saw, he just, yeah. Again, Eli Chase breathing down, just being in. Because what is it, last night, it's kind of crazy that he went 5-6-2 for second overall. So thank God for Triple Crown format, I guess, in the sense of if you look at his first and second main, if, again, this is like really theoretical, if this was a standalone main event, you had what happened to Jet, and he only gets a 6 on the night or something, like your moment to capitalize gets so much worse. If he does want this title, he really has to be in it every race for the next five, it feels like. You know what I mean? Like, he has to be there to capitalize if Jet has one more, either just something shit happens or if he has a rookie mistake night. He has to be there every night for the next five races. He has to be there to capitalize.
Which Cooper is good at doing, but yeah, it's going to be harder if he doesn't start.
Yeah. Is that saying if Cooper is... Like I said, if he starts just one or two spots more, so every time something happens to a Jeff, he's third, you know, Coop, let's say it's Jet leading, Chase second, Chase Sexton, Webb third, and we're halfway through main and something happens to Jet, Cooper wills himself to do things. He will pick it up, find a way to, you know, Chase inherits the lead, Webb will go after him. Webb will find something inside of him. But he can't do that if he's fifth in a main. He can't do that if he's sixth in a main.
Yeah. Very well done to Hunter. His first 450 podium. Especially impressive considering he was only recently injured and is still dealing with that injury a little bit. An interesting take on this or discussion on this is with Hunter's podium, how does that affect the way that you view Justin Cooper's season? Because I feel like Justin Cooper and Hunter are very good matchup, a very good comparison. So now that Hunter has the edge of being on the podium, does that make you actually look on Justin Cooper's season in a more negative way?
No, only because, like, I think just it's tough. It doesn't shock me because, of course, Hunter's been more successful, the two of them. So it doesn't shock me that Hunter is the one with the podium. I don't want to downplay Hunter. I would say for the most part, Justin Cooper has had more consistently impressive rides. Hunter's had a bigger impressive moment with getting on the podium, of course, and having a heat race win. But I think even though Justin Cooper's results only shows, I think night to night, his qualifying has been for, again, just not being that flashy, right? Like, Jay Coop has had some amazing qualifying performances, amazing starts, ran with some guys, come from behind pass. I think Jay Coop has showed more consistently good rides than Hunter, but Hunter's big moments are bigger at the moment, if that makes sense. So No, I'm genuinely impressed with Jay Coop this year. So at least me personally, like diagnosing it, looking at everything, I think they're both having impressive as hell seasons. One of them doesn't outweigh the other. One of them doesn't look down negatively on the other for me.
Another fun game I had, actually. So Justin Cooper, 147 points. Justin Barsha, 138 points. Hunter Lawrence, 133 points. Malcolm Stewart, 130. Four riders, 17 points. Cooper, Barsha, Lawrence, Stewart. Out of that group, who finishes at the top at the end of the year?
Hunter.
Yeah, I think I go that way too. But that is an interesting little group. There's a lot of ins and outs with that group. I could always, like, if you made a case for any rider, I would kind of be like, yeah, okay, I can see that.
One fun one I want to ask Hunter, like, I mean, seeing his reaction on the podium was awesome, like, genuinely enjoying it. Like, okay, in Hunter's case, you know, moved up with, he's in a weird situation where, of course, his brother is elated to potentially be somebody that's going to break, you know, has the potential of breaking the records, the record book in multiple ways, etc. He's so good in his own right, but he falls also in that category of, I did this here. So like everybody that has a factory ride this year won a 250 title of some shape or form. And Hunter's in that category. You know, I feel like last year he wins 250. He was very serious. He knew he had a job to get done, but seeing him like elated to be performing on a 450, it's kind of like, I want to ask him, like, what's that like where, you know, a lot of people look at, oh, you won 250 titles, you've gained true success, you came from Australia, you did all this stuff, but a lot of other guys have won that title and then never really made it happen on 450s, and now that he's chipping away at 450s, like, how enjoyable that process is, you know, how it makes you look back at your 250 success, multiple things of that nature, if you get what I mean. Because it's like 250 was so expected to get the job done, and I kind of wonder, I almost want to ask him, like, did you ever expect to get this far? Kind of thing.
No, I think he definitely did. 100%. Right. Rattling on a little bit because time is of the essence. AP was really good in the first one.
Yes.
Like that was I've been on record as saying that the first lap or two of Glendale before he crashed was the best AP. That first main event was equal to that in my mind. Before it started going awry with the he blames bike setup. He said his setup went away and it kind of turned it into a bit of a shit show. But then he... You know what? Do you remember the press conference at Anaheim 1 when someone asked him about the frame and he went, I don't even know what frame I'm on. And we all were like, ha ha ha, he's deflected. Yeah. I now believe he was actually being serious. Because I said to him... Because he said this about... He said, yeah, first main event was good. Bike setup was off though, and I said, what did you change? And he just went, I honestly don't know. I told them this is what I was feeling, and they just gave me a bike and it works better. And I was like, and it cast my mind back to that press conference, and I was like, maybe this is just who you are. Like, maybe this wasn't some sort of game and you are just like given a bike and you're happy.
Well, which is a positive. Some guys, I feel like, you know, there are people like Ross, there's guys that get very involved with the technical side of really what is going on their bike. But I also think at a crossover with some moto guys, like there's some riders that probably would be a little better off being AP, where you just put your trust in the guys and be like, here's what I'm feeling. Do something. Don't tell me. Don't care. Just here's what's up.
Chase had an off night compared to where he has been lately. One observation. Well, he was at his best at the end of the second main, and I feel like this is now a bit of a pattern with Chase where he's better later in the mains. I don't know what that would be attributed to, but I feel like there's enough evidence where it's like the second half of the main seems to be drastically improved on the first half of the main. But I saw a video of the second turn crash in the first main event. Chase crashed, walked back to his bike, and then a Honda like jumped into him, like just him, like as he was just stood there. And I never noticed that. And I watched it like five times and I was like, huh, I wonder if that like hurt him, because it, you know, a bike has just struck a person. It looks like it would have at least dinged you up a little bit. I also have no idea who it was, because Chase didn't have the best start anyway. And in the time it took for him to crash, walk back to his bike, this other bike just came along.
Which main was that, second or first?
No, first one.
I hate to say because it's the running joke with everything. Was it? No. Was it? Wait. So the first main. I'm trying to think of when he went down. Did he go down because of the Oldenburg situation? Was it Oldenburg's when he got up?
No, because it was like someone coming through the rhythm. But the I guess the video I saw was of the TV, but you could only see a front mudguard. Weird. Yeah. I kind of was just watching it nonchalantly, and then I was like, "Oh, that looked like it might have hurt a little bit." Barsha, you know what? Is that Barsha's second best result of the year? It must be.
Gotta be.
Yeah, because I he's not been in the top five apart from San Diego. So there you go. That's progress. I feel like Malcolm was better as well. That ties his best result of the year. Or actually, that might be his best result of the year. I feel like his best was an eighth. No, seventh. He has had a seventh in Daytona. But and this is also kind of a bit of a pattern with Malcolm now as well. He was really good in free practice. And for some reason, that just didn't translate to the rest of the day. And there was definitely another round this year where free practice was like really good. And then it just...
I think it's happened more. There's like two or three rounds where his qualifying was really good. I thought, oh, here's the night. And then it just was back to I hate the word abysmal, but I mean, abysmal.
I'm not even talking qualifying. Like, from free practice to qualifying one, it just disappeared. And I don't really, like, I was watching the first free practice and I was like, oh, here we go. Like, Malcolm seems to be back a little bit.
Your chase question, I was going to say it, but I didn't want to point blame because it's a running joke that Vince Freeze does everything. It's Vince Freeze that hits Chase while he's getting up.
It does look a little like painful, doesn't it?
Pumps him. It just pumps him over really quick. Yeah. But it's Vince Freeze because Vince is flying off his bike, coming off the single.
Oh, the bike has no rider on it.
Not quite. He's like Superman. He's barely hanging on to it.
Okay. For some reason, the video I saw, you could only see a mudguard or a fender, I guess, is what I should be saying. Yeah, we did Jet, we did Cooper. Anderson is my final rider I've got a note on. Quite a good press day interview with him. Basically, the reason he's been not so good lately is he's really struggling with the new Kawasaki in soft and rutted conditions. So there you go. That's that. I have not much more to say. There we go. We've got an answer. That's what's happened to Anderson lately. But he was improved in St. Louis, but crashed in the last main event, which hurt his overall result. Starts weren't great, so he didn't really get a chance to show what he had, but he was definitely better to a degree. And speaking of better, let me tell you about Beta. But Vital MX is proudly supported by Beta Motorcycles, which has been a family-owned company since 1905. Beta manufactures the finest enduro, trials, dual sport, and motocross motorcycles that are known for their top quality and rideability. Their newest model, the 450 RX, is the first four-stroke motocross model built by Beta. It was designed to offer a ride that is more forgiving, with the rare combination of premium performance and undeniable appeal. Check out betausa.com for more information. And you know what? Benny Bloss deserves a lot more credit for how he has stabilized his season as a 10th through 13th place rider. Like, he's really become just a consistent, good guy, which, yeah, credit to him and credit to Beta.
I would also like to point out something funny. On the sign-up sheet...
We don't do funny on this podcast anymore, but I'll allow it.
Benny Bloss is the Liqui Moly Beta Racing, and Colt Nichols is Liqui Moly Beta Factory Racing. Well, why can't Benny be Factory Racing as well?
Well, the key part is that they're both on a beta, so that's the most important aspect.
Why? Because they didn't show any of this on TV. Like, didn't come up. What was up with Roxon's second main?
Honestly? I don't know. I can't remember.
Because they had to go to backup bike. And I was just wondering, because usually when I see their backup bike, it doesn't have some of the same. I was just wondering, like, as simple as it was, like, they never really showed why he was so far back. He didn't make a very far throw. I was kind of wondering.
He crashed on lap one.
Yeah, I know he crashed on lap one, but then just didn't make it as far as I thought. I was kind of wondering, okay, was the bike banged up? Was the backup bike, was something not set up identical to the main bike, and he just wasn't super comfortable through the main? But it was one that just never got addressed. I just kept looking at him on the scoring sheet. I'm like, I wish I knew what was going on here.
Yeah. I feel like it's yet another example of when the first main event doesn't exactly go well, it kind of snowballs a little bit. Like, hard to get your feet back under you, because actually, if you look at the results, who had a really bad first main event who then just killed it the rest of the night?
That's always kind of a running joke with Triple Crown. Because what is it? Something like nobody has ever won a Triple Crown overall with worse than, what, a fifth or sixth in the first moto or something?
Oh, I don't know. I've never heard that.
It's something. I mean, Chase is probably one of the biggest bucks of the trans. Again, a 10th in the first race and then a 5-3. But yeah, something like Triple Crown, like, I mean, homes everything. Like, usually first motos do just ruin it.
50 class.
Well, no. Got one more for you. AC, am I the only person? I'm sure everybody felt the same way. Did you think AC season ended?
No.
I thought it was knee for sure for a minute.
I mean, I was concerned, but I did not think that.
Okay. I was freaking out for a minute. I thought, you know, Shane leaving, just like, it's just that age ulcer, like, could terrible things just happen. AC, at first split minute, I was like, please don't tell me it's his knee.
Well, to be honest with you, I struggled to think of much else whilst watching AC, besides the fact that his Fox Racing gear looked so incredibly amazing. 2024, it's Fox Racing's 50th anniversary year, marking 5 decades of getting after it. Rides, innovations, victories, celebrate 50 years of looking forward with Fox. Hello, future. And hello, 250 class, as we transition.
A kitchen.
Well, I'd just like to double down on what I said last week. I do strongly believe now that Levi Kitchen is the number one 250 rider in the USA.
I think I'm 100% on the train. He'll win the first East West shootout. Like, welcome to Levi's world. We were just playing it. He is, I know, Triple Crown, that's not really mains. He has now led every single lap, 4 mains in a row, a true main event, and then 3 Triple Crowns. What the heck?
Honestly, when we get to the East-West showdown, is it just going to be all pro circuit bikes off the start?
This is back to the discussion we had last week, just about the quickness of the dynasties changing over. It just feels like PC is back on it, everything. Like, don't get me wrong, the star bikes are probably still the fastest in the class, but PC bikes, power curve, starts, everything, like, these, they're fucking phenomenal right now. And props to Mitch after all the down years to be going through what they are right now. It's pretty cool to see.
Also, once again, I just cannot get my head around how much better Levi looks on a Kawasaki, like, style-wise. It's phenomenal. He looks so good on a PC bike. But on the Yamaha, he looked so hunchback and just
It's interesting to hear him say, like, one of the biggest differences, I'd heard this even when he was at Star, that one thing he didn't like there was the inability to work on, you know, stuff he struggles with, in a sense. Just the external ground, like, oh no, we're doing motos, we're doing stopwatch. And to be fair, I hear the same thing about Baker's program, like, swole guys, like, struggling with whoops, guys that needed maybe to work on certain things don't get that opportunity because it's just so regimented. And Levi just said it was, you know, stopwatch national basically every day. And at PC, you know, with doing his own program in Florida, is just being able to work on stuff. Funny thing with the starts getting really good, I actually heard this from somebody today, is similar starts. The last couple weeks, the HEP crew have been working on a lot of starts with Kenny, with Shane, and Kyle. And Levi's been doing a lot. It sounds like basically they've been doing a lot more starts sandbox lately, like working a lot of stuff. Levi's been working on it. And Levi mentioned something about somebody he trusts or looks up to, kind of talking about the mentality of, like, do you show up to a race basically, like, hoping you can win, or showing up with the intention of winning? And a lot of that makes me wonder how much of that is, you know, him being around, like, Kenny and Chase and those kind of guys there, like, who, I kind of wonder if it's Kenny, for example.
Wait, what do you mean? Oh, you've lost me. What?
There was a comment on the broadcast. It was either directly from Levi or somebody's camp that somebody that's very close to Levi they respects in a way. In the last couple of weeks, have basically, you know, while he's been trying to work on starts, it's a really race intensity that somebody had mentioned to me, like, do you, it was something along the lines of, you know, do you show up to the race just hoping you have a chance at winning, or do you show up with the intention of winning?
That sounds like a Lewis Phillips press day question. I might add that to my little list. That's a good little one. What was going to be my press day question this past weekend was, I actually can't remember it now. It was going to be something similar, like, does happiness solely come from winning for you, or can you separate the results and the happiness? Basically, do you live or die by your results, or have you found a way to separate those? But I didn't use that, and thank God, because talking about starts didn't get me very far. So imagine if I tried to do something more in depth. Jesus. Anyway, back to 250s. Are we done with Kitchen? Kitchen's a favorite for this title. And honestly, talking to RJ after the race, I felt like he was deflated, a little defeated. Yep. He said, like, he voluntarily said, I didn't even ask him about, like, bigger picture, and he just voluntarily said, I'm gonna have to win out now. And I was like, well, no, because there's an east-west showdown, like, you don't have to win out. But
I mean, if you're RJ, here's my opinion. In I listened to the interview, and he tried to say the last race he, you know, had something for him potentially to start. Out of all the laps in the main, he was only better than Levi on 2 laps out of 11. It wasn't by much. Like, he says that, but there's got to be a part of him that's just like, okay, Levi's qualifying amazing, getting whole shots, has early race pace, everything. Levi is really full package right now. If you're RJ, I think you're pretty aware that Levi's, like what we just said, we think Levi's going to kill it at East-West Shootout. I think RJ's aware of that, so it's not banking off of, oh, East-West Shootout, Levi could lose some points. Like, he's aware he has to just straight up beat him like he was a couple rounds ago. Like, he has to be what Levi is. RJ has to be the whole package. And he's not right now. Don't get me wrong, he's riding amazing, but he's not the complete package.
Well, as I said in the interview, I feel like he is a complete... He has the puzzle pieces for the complete package, but they're not connecting at the same time.
Which has to be hard, because a couple rounds ago, it was. And the thing that stood out to me with him last night, and this might be overanalyzing, and I'm not trying to like pick him, but there was a point earlier this year where I was talking about like how it finally looked like he wasn't overriding the bike. Like, the bike was good enough for him, and everything he was throwing at it, it would accept. I really felt like last night we were took a back step on that, where we were overriding. Just a lot of pushing the front, coming into corners, losing traction on exit, overriding, a lot of clipping and rhythms again. Just little stuff. It's really minor. It's part of RJ's style, but it was kind of back to that. Okay, there's just a lot of micro mistakes everywhere. I think he's got, of course, the willpower to make it happen, and at times the muscling it through works for him. And I know he was having to try, because that track was a little harder to pass on, but it isn't big mistakes. It's like little micro ones all the time, where it just looked like he was back to overriding it a little bit. And I just wondered if some of that was frustration, going like, I need to be where Levi is.
It will be interesting when we get to the East-West showdown. That will be a very interesting dynamic, because I'm not entirely certain how it's going to stack up. As I said, Levi would be my clear favorite to win that as well as the West title right now. But I'm not certain that, like, McAdoo and Vial, they could just come out and be better than the West guys. I mean, I'd probably lean the opposite way, but...
Yeah, it's potential, but I agree. I really think Levi's the best guy right now. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying he's going to dominate an East-West shootout. I lean towards him being the favorite and the best guy, but Cameron's riding amazing, Tom's riding amazing, and in fact, RJ is riding amazing. Even I was impressed, like, even Jordan's bounce back from last weekend was better than I expected.
Yes. One more point on RJ quickly. I believe I said this to him preseason, maybe at the Husqvarna intro, But I feel like this is the first year where RJ could really enter with, like, I'm going to win a title sort of mindset. Because last year he was up against Jet. So, you know, there's a bit of you that's like, Jet's just better. Whereas this year, he fully would have entered with, like, this is my year. So if he does lose this title, I'd imagine it will be a new mental hurdle to overcome. Like, just dealing with that deflation. And obviously, there's still a long way to go.
The generations move on, and this should have been his. And then another guy came in the picture. And let me ask you this. Again, him feeling like maybe this is finally his time. What Levi is doing right now, even looking ahead, what does that make you think for outdoors? Because, again, I'm so heavy on Levi right now. Like I've talked about, like I think down the road 450 will be amazing, but outdoors, how good is he going to be outdoors potentially? Who are, like, we're flash forwarding here, but might as well bring it up. Like, does what's going on between these two series, between Tom stepping it up and just the confidence he's going to kind of have after Supercross, Hayden kind of being on the back foot, Levi having this amazing run, what does it do to your predictions entering outdoors?
I said this recently to someone, maybe it was even on this podcast. I really do not know what to expect come 250 outdoors, because I just don't. Like, I honestly don't know. I honestly do not have a feeling other than Deegan was so good last year that, like, okay, that's like living in my mind a little bit. But apart from that, I kind of feel like it's a blank canvas almost, and we don't really have much to go off of, because so much of 250 outdoors in recent years has been the Lawrence brothers and Justin Cooper. But I feel like this is really a clean slate, and there's not really much to make predictions off of, and I'm reluctant to do it based on what we're seeing in Supercross, just because it is so different. So I will honestly, when it comes time to really dive into that, I'm going to be a bit lost almost, I feel like. Like, I don't have a strong conviction in any direction, which is weird.
I have weird feelings, and I'm not saying these, like, predictions, because I could see them biting me in the ass severely, but these are just, like, weird, just things I thought about. Coming into it, Hayden on back foot, but I think he'll recover quickly. Maybe it does affect him the opening round or two, but, I mean, we saw he was capable last year. I have a weird feeling, like, where last year, Jay Coop, of course, was real good. I think Hayden will stand out at Star. I don't know if anybody else at Star will be in the title contention talk outdoors. I just don't think so. I think Levi, of course, is going to carry all this momentum and is going to shock people how good he's going to be at the beginning outdoors. I think Joe at HRC Honda, I hate to say it, is going to be a struggle at the beginning of outdoors. I don't think they're going to be as dialed in as he was at PC. I think he will be a slow burn and get better at the end of the season as it has. And I think RJ will be good at the beginning outdoors. And Tom. I kind of like Levi, RJ, Tom, Hayden are like my four for outdoors that I feel very strongly about. And maybe this will all blow up in my face, and maybe I'm wrong, and the rest of the Star guys won't be that far off. I don't know. Maybe Bomero DiFrancesco will be way better than I expect or something, but meh.
I was just happy to let you ramble and dig yourself a hole.
Yeah. Just as I said, this is not pretty. I'm just ready to dig a hole. And then I left Cameron out of that because I'm an idiot. Austin will be back by then.
Shimoda's starts were much better. So the starts definitely took a step forward. But in a, again, fun game, does the fact that Shimoda had better starts and didn't factor into the fight for the win make you look upon him more negatively than previous rounds where he didn't have a start and just move forward? Like, no. It's almost more worrying in a way.
Yeah, no, it's kind of weird. Like, the top end pace is, I think, very similar. It doesn't, just because of how good Levi is right now. None of that shocked me. I get what you mean. Does it make you go, oh, we've been saying all this time, if Joe could get a start, he would do it. I kind of haven't been on that boat of like a start was a guarantee for him. But oddly enough, I say this, and I said this last week, Joe oddly comes on late the season, whether you say when's pressure off, he finally gets it figured out. I still think, I'm not saying it's going to happen, I still think Joe could win a super, is more than likely to win a Supercross for the end of the year, just because it'll happen. but it's not just because starts have made it happen. It wasn't ever going to come around just because of starts. Like, there's multiple things that need to happen for him to win a race. And what happened last night doesn't just shock me, because Levi is just amazing right now.
I'm not good enough at math to figure this out, so I'll pose this loosely. If it wasn't for the San Francisco DNF, Shimoda would be somewhat in the battle for second in points. I think he would be behind RJ, probably similar to Jordan. No. I don't know where. I'm not good enough at math. I think he might be around RJ. Point being, does the San Francisco DNF make us look at Joe's season as more of a failure than it has actually been? Because take that out and he should be in the top three somewhere and looking much better. I mean, point being, take away San Francisco, he has gone 4-4-4-3-3-2, which is fine. Almost, like, that's not terrible.
So right? Let's give him, okay, at the time, if you look at the opening rounds, him getting fourth, let's say you give him fourth at the round we had a DNF at, that puts him ahead of Jordan, but Jordan also killed himself at a race, and that still puts him behind RJ. Yeah, the points total, it is easier to say, oh, look, Joe's first season at HRC, he's a top three guy in the championship. I still don't think that changes my perspective on his season that much, because again, he's having to fill big shoes, man. But Lawrence has put such a aura around what, you know, HRC being back in the 250 class. And not that Joe isn't an amazing rider, but that's just, again, what Jen Hunter were capable of, that the program is good, but they willed it that extra little bit, and Joe's missing that in a sense right now. I wouldn't really change my perspective that much on a season. It's still down to not great starts, not great initial sprint speed, like the heat race kind of thrown away, just not being able to be there early in the season, which is, you know, kind of been a little bit of an MO for him. So I still wouldn't label his, like, woohoo success if we, you know, if he's sitting third in points right now, if we gave him those points from San Francisco back.
Juju has gone 7-7-7-7 at the last four races. So well done on the consistency. And in a similar breath, I was surprised to see that Ryder D in eighth tied his season best finish, because I feel as though he has been much better than that. So I'm surprised that his best result is an eighth.
Yeah, it's been like what happened last night at Tough Block. It's just been a lot of weird little things happen to him. Nothing crazy. Definitely the results, I think he's rode a little better than the results. It's just, yeah, been one little weird stuff. Not trying to dig here, but weird one for me with Beaumare. We had three amazing starts, great initial lap speed, then just kind of flat in the middle. It's his rookie season, but considering that's kind of where we were, like, we were kind of there day one, and then we had a big drop off in the middle. We're sort of getting back there. Like, do you look at the Triple Crown as, oh, a big improvement because Julian ran up front, or do you look at it as kind of like, eh, a little concerning because he was so flat in the middle of all three mains?
Neither. I'm somewhere in the middle where I'm like, some crucial building blocks were set down in St. Louis, and let's see where he goes from here and how he builds on that. I do not believe that it was a massive step forward and positive, nor do I believe it was a negative in any way. It was just another step in his rookie season. Yeah, that would be where I tackle it from. Let's see here. Mumford was much better again. The last two races have been really good for him and a step forward. Does Mumford get a look in at a factory team?
No.
Okay.
I will say his last race, I mean, well, he got fifth at the last round. So, I mean, 12-10-9 this weekend was kind of more meh, but the last round was fifth, correct?
Yeah, but he was fast in practice again. Like, I feel like it's there. Like,
well, okay, so I say, man, like, okay, answer to me, where is it? Like, and I'm just being like, this is kind of a conversation. Like, the 250 market is very open. There's a lot of contracts up. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of availability for movement. But where do you think the place is?
Well, let me put it this way. If I was Star, and I had a choice between Moserman and Mumford, I probably would have gone Mumford.
Yeah. No, I can see that, because that's actually one of the next things we have to converse about is Moserman. Oh, Jesus.
Well, this was actually a segue. So Moserman is fine.
He's fine, but Jesus Christ.
He was landed on in the second main event. His Yamaha PR quote is as follows. The day was going pretty good. Then in the second main, I was landed on. It was just outside of my control. Thankfully, I'm doing all right. I'm very sore, but I will be okay. Obviously, as well as that, he had a hard crash in practice. And was there not an incident in the first main as well? Why do I...
I feel like there was... I just, the whole experience, so him, you know, coming in last round, there was the whole back issue, wasn't even know if he was going to race, then supposedly hurt his ankle right before the race, and then weeds in practice this weekend or stuff. I just, it's concerning, of course, because it's a little bit too much same old, same old. It just, I really like Michael as a person. He's on top, but he's super fun to talk to. I feel for him, but like, if I'm sitting here purely objectively from the like questioning of why, I do kind of go, man, I really wonder what Star has in his, it got announced as a multi-year deal. I really wonder what's in there for performance clauses.
Do you, and I'm surprised, I feel like this has never happened. Do you feel like Star, Bobby, or I guess it would be Bobby, would do an interview about like, why do you have so many riders? What is the motivation behind the swinging for the fences?
Yeah, Bobby, I actually think I could get that interview with him. And I know from talking to him what it is and how he pitches on the field. They truly believe, you know, the way I've heard him talk to people, like, hey, we believe if we put your guy on our bike with our program, they're going to be a winner. We can make them into a winner. I think I said this last week. I think they look at it as we have the 10 out of 10 bike, and we can take a 7 or an 8 out of 10 rider and make him a winner, which I really feel in moto is moto's a weird one for a motorsports. Any other sport, any other motorsports, we talk F1, we talk MotoGP, NASCAR. Yeah, a 7 or 8 out of 10 driver or rider can win in 10 out of 10 equipment. Moto, it's a little more the other way. It's a 9 or a 10 out of 10 rider can win on 7 out of 10 equipment.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It's definitely swinging for the fences. It's what Mitch was a few years ago. It's lower upfront pay, get bonuses. We have the best program. It's inclusive, etc. You know, I think they really believe it deep down that they can do it. I mean, Dag's like, it's worked with a few guys, but I also think you look at LeBlanc, like the amount of ones that have not worked out is higher than the success rate in a sense.
Do you want to know who I really feel for? And I don't know what the future holds. Styles Robertson.
I think he's... I thought about this the other day, yeah, because his contract's up this year. I mean, he had a very bad wrist injury. He has to have like three... I think he had to have three or has to have three total surgeries for this one. I can almost... this is just me speaking from relationships. I can almost guarantee you he ends up at Triumph next year.
Yeah, actually, that makes... a lot of sense.
Hit him in the first place. Like, I remember joking with Scuba because Styles and Jalik are both like sons, him and Bobby. And I made a joke to, before they ever, I mean, even early last year, I made a joke to him about which, you know, about hiring basically the people he treats son. He goes, well, I think he made a joke about, well, you know, which one's my son? And I'm like, yeah, which one of the two? He goes, well, which one didn't just sign a 2-year deal? Like, I think joking that they would have won to even had Styles this early. But I think that they'll try to make it work to get him if they can. But it was like, at the same time, I think Triumph has been very impressive this year. So, I mean, somebody, no offense to Styles, somebody more deserving that had a really good season this year could get that spot. So I don't mean it like it's 100% guaranteed, but I think there's a strong chance they'll try to make it work.
I was high on Styles in the Husky days when he first got this Star deal, and I still believe that he could do...
Me and you both last year. Because, again, I think the Husky deal, you look at how his results, and half the time he was coming... like off, had only been on the bike a week from being out for 3 or 4 months. Like, so I agree with you there.
you know, I really do believe in him. And if he's healthy coming into 2025 Supercross, I will peg him to do big things. And I can almost guarantee that I would pick him as my surprise that no one's talking about. I just believe in him. I don't know why. Just, you know, there's always, we all have like riders who we see and we just, for some reason, we as individuals see something that we believe in, even though other people don't see it. You're just like, you see something and then you just never forget it. And that's kind of me with Styles. Like, I don't really know what it is, but I just subconsciously believe in him. Touching, really. Anything else you want to talk about? Everything is awesome. Anything else awesome?
One little note, Talon Hawkins, 10th. A lot better than where his season's been, because I know straight up he had a pretty much, what's the word, coming to Jesus talk with a couple people around him. It was basically, if you don't figure this out, you're going to be SOL at the end of the season.
What does, like, SOL mean?
Shit out of luck.
Oh, I've never heard that in my life.
It's SOL. More American thing, shit out of luck. Based on how his season was going, it was basically where, like, KTM support was getting a bunch of stuff. Like, it was not looking good. So, I mean, 10th is a huge step in the right direction for him, because it has been a rough start to this year for him. After, you know, a pretty decent solid season at Husky last year, we got drawn up at the last minute. This year's just been rough and all out of sorts. I think him trying to figure himself out, figure out, you know, structure, what to do, etc. So that's good. Burdone, oddest thing ever. He got 11th overall with 11th in all three motos and scored 11th points. Wow, symmetry. Poor Phil Nicoletti. At least he didn't totally want to kill himself this weekend compared to last weekend, but poor Phil.
Did you listen to my post-race interview with Cade?
No, I didn't. I hadn't listened to the Cade one yet.
It's very colorful.
Is it?
Yeah, because he had a run-in with Webb again.
So, okay, this actually, there's something I wanted to talk about in 450s, and this kind of segues, that's perfect segue into it, because it involves Cade, it involves MCR, a few other things, and this is something I want to pose to you as a ender to this podcast, as a conversation. So you're a team, the current landscape of the sport, you know, yes, it's cheaper to run 450s, but anymore it's gotten to the point where good 450 guys, the prices are kind of up again. 250s are more expensive to run, but good kids are a dime a dozen. I kind of, when I look at like Cade, your PRMX with Cade, your MCR with your Vince's and your Mitchell's, like Mitchell having his incident this weekend with AC, and Vince just being the constant conversation, and Cade being the way, if you're a team, would you want to field 450s to be a part of the big premier class if you don't have the money, knowing you're going to have guys that are 15th back that, when trying their best, are going to have these incidents with the top sports stars, that's going to get you destroyed on social media. They're going to get yelled at. There's going to be these questions if lappers, you know what you're doing. Or would you just want to go to the 250 class and just help some kids out and stay out of the limelight issue?
I would do 450s. And whilst you were talking there, all I could think is that we do need to do a better job of like pushing the narrative with these 15 to 22 place riders, like pushing who's going for a season best result, pushing who has, like, for instance, I really wanted to mention on this podcast that Cade rode exceptionally well in the LCQ. And I really felt like that just deserved some credit. And we didn't get to it because time was so tight, but it was like, we've got to move on. But it shouldn't be like that. Like, I was thinking, for some reason, it was on my mind all weekend, and I don't know why, but like, I feel like we as media can do more to make it more worthwhile for these riders and teams in the 450 class in the second half of the field.
Let me ask you this. When we usually get to the end of our 450 field, you're like, okay, moving on, and you'll be like, you'll give me the opportunity to say something about one or two guys. You're like, oh, okay, that enough, let's move on. You don't seem very interested in talking.
Well, no, I'm the host. I've got to move this thing along because we would be here forever otherwise. The MXGP podcast last week was 2 hours.
Oh, like, God damn it,
let's go. We can't be doing this podcast for 2 hours.
Can we? Can we not?
But like, you know what? Like, maybe we shouldn't have spoken about Eli for 20 million minutes, and we should have shaved some of that off to look at.
Maybe we just start a two-part podcast. We do one top 10 of each class, and we do a second one the next day on the 10th to 20th.
Or we just, maybe we cap Jamie's show as being like the part two. I don't know. I've always fought this.
Ford struggles with it. You look at NASCAR and guys are celebrated for, you know, oh, this guy's got, you know, 15 top 20s this season, 7 top 10s, 3 top 5s. Like, those numbers mean more.
Yeah, it's not just Supercross, it's MXGP and everything. Like, there's just not a... I don't know what it is. Like for instance, let's see if there's a perfect example of this. Please hold while I pull up the points. Okay, perfect example. McElrath got his first top 10 since San Fran, so his first dry top 10 of the year. That should be cause for discussion, interview, story, everything else. And I don't know, like, I put a lot of the blame on us as media because I feel like we should do a better job of making it seem like a big deal. But yeah, you know, it's weird. Like, F1, someone gets 10th place for the first time. It's a much, much bigger deal. And actually, in my MXGP days, I talked about this and I posed this once or twice. So let me do this to you as well now. Would the solution to that problem be going to an F1 style format where, say, the top 12 riders get points and the rest don't? So that then, if a rider is on the cusp of 12th, it is a bigger story because you're like first points of the season, which is an obvious narrative. Whereas the realistically now, okay, McElrath just got his first top 10, but he's been 11th a ton of times and there's 1 point difference. So really, like, you know, it doesn't read as big a deal as it realistically is. You get me?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Me being a massive F1 fan, because one thing I actually dislike about F1 is that they only pay to top 10. It sucks because it creates storyline, but it also creates the factor of where you can see later in the race just like a certain amount of guys just give the fuck up because they're not racing for anything anymore.
Yeah, and I do feel as though the culture in this sport is a lot of the privateers would just not bother going because they would be like, we can't get points, so we're out.
Well, even like we've posted and talked about, like, I hate the fact that right now that 22nd in a main doesn't get a point because what separates it from the LCQ, and arguably getting fifths in LCQs is more valuable to a rider because they'll go do Steve's pulp race. They'll have over 100K person at the end of the year. Like, if at the end of the night, I'm a rider that gets 22nd, I actually posed this question on the forum, and a lot of people agree, like, yeah, more people said 22nd needs some points. Either it needs to be restructured or the bottom two just both get 1 point. But I saw a few guys that were like, I get it. The guys that have never done it, have never truly done it, that don't have to live it. It's not their job. But like, fuck no, I would rather take a main with 0 points because I have the status of main. We're on paper. Like, at the end of the day, you basically didn't because you get 0 fucking points for it. Like, at the end of the day, pretty much grand scheme of things, it's never going to show you did shit in making mains. And at that point, if I was the guy getting last place, getting 0 points in a main, I'd say, fuck this. I wish I would have got fifth in the LCQ tonight.
Yeah, but so that would be the negative, but you do agree that if the points were capped at 12th, then take Benny, for instance. Benny has been 11, 12, 13, 14 a lot lately. When Benny gets points versus not get points, it would be a bigger deal. And when it comes time to interview him, it would be a bigger, like, you got points, your first points of the season, you know? Like, do you agree that that would be an angle that would help drive interest? But obviously the negative probably outweighs the positive.
Yeah, it does. There's other ways to get around. Like, I think about, okay, they're kind of trying to push more towards the OEM Cup, but not really talking about those. Like, another way, a part of it in F1 too, is the points are really important because they're so tied to the constructors' titles as well. Like, at the end of the day, it's the part of that story is, okay, when you're Williams, when you're AlphaTauri, when you're those teams, it's partially, yeah, your driver got a point, but it's partially, oh my God, they helped for the constructors' titles that pays tens of millions of dollars per decision, and you have these teams fighting over 1 or 2 points because it's a huge money amount. If another thing in the sport is like, if the OEM championship mattered more. In a way, it's easier to talk about, and they displayed where the points came from. It wasn't just the top finish. It would be like, okay, yeah. Hey, yeah, Benny, you got a 10th tonight. That's huge for Beta. Helped you guys overcome Triumph in the this year, et cetera, et cetera. Like, that's part of what it is in F1. It's not just sole driver. It's team and constructors as well that storyline gets driven so much.
Yeah, but I would, if I look at myself personally, I don't know if you could ever get me to care about manufacturer standings in Supercross or Motocross. I don't know why, just because I guess I know that it's not that big a deal. I don't know, or maybe because it's not really been around for much of my life. To transition it to it now being a massive deal would be difficult for me. But I don't know if it's even possible to get me to buy into it. Even if you say, hey, Lewis, here's $200,000. I want you to push the promotional train of the manufacturer points. I would do it for the money, obviously. But I still don't think that would get me to really buy into it, you know, and care from the bottom of my heart.
For everyone wondering what Lewis Phillips' service has cost, if you wanted him on your team, you just heard the price.
No one wants me on their team. I'm out. I'm retired. Oh, by the way, I forgot to say I'm retiring today. So, bye, everyone. It's been great.
The roundabout to your conversation, yes, I think the sport, and I think it's a combination. We can sit here at the end of the day and say, as journalists, we need to do a better job. I think the sport itself needs to do a better job to make, whether it's a points restructuring, whether there's some sort of conversation there, even the broadcast, like, and part of it's fans. Fans have to give a crap as well. Like, I hate our sport. It's a team effort in a sense. Like, we all need to do better in some shape or form.
Yeah, no, for sure. I fully agree with that. A rising tide raises all ships. And I don't know what the solution to that is. Like, I'm just looking at it. Like, Colt Nichols had his best result of the season 1 week after making them, 1 week after not making the main event. That should be a massive story. Actually, no, sorry. His worst result of the season. I thought I had points up. I have finishing positions. That's my bad. Disregard what I just said. Jeremy Hand made his second main event of the season. That should be a massive story. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not a massive story, but a bigger story. Just this stuff. Like, I don't know. Let's try and be better. Anything else you want to talk about? Everything is awesome?
Everything is awesome.
Any other awesome points from the weekend you want to talk about?
No, everything's awesome. This podcast is awesome. Life's awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
My Uber driver told me to be careful because St. Louis is the murder capital of America. So that wasn't very awesome.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, I was like, okay. Cool.
Then why'd you bring it up on this podcast? This is Everything Awesome podcast.
Because I'm retiring, so it doesn't matter. I'm on my way out.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
I'm going to Snowcross. Have you ever noticed how MXGP pushes Snowcross? And it's the weirdest thing ever.
Yeah, because it's...
It's in front owned.
Yeah, it's in front owned.
Why do in front own it? Like, for the life of me, I cannot figure out what on earth they must gain from it. But like, I just randomly will get an email saying like, Snowcross today.
Maybe if in front's lucky, they can get purchased up here. Liberty Media that owns F1 is in the process of buying MotoGP from Dorna right now. Maybe they can buy MXGP while they're at next. And then maybe they won't schedule all three of them to have a freaking GP in Spain on the same weekend. When we had the MXGP of Spain, there was also a MotoGP race in Spain. I think a World Superbike. I don't think it was F1. It was what? World Superbike, MotoGP, and MXGP were all in Spain in the same weekend or some BS.
Yeah,
like
but MotoGP was in Portugal.
Still close enough. Like,
that's racist. Which isn't awesome, in case you were wondering. That is not awesome. Right, I think we're done. Are we done?
We're done.
Okay. Thank you for listening, everyone. I don't feel like I was very good on this podcast. My apologies. Been a long weekend.
Long weekend of not feeling like you were good enough. I'm sorry, Lewis.
Not even that. Just a long weekend of just feeling like you can't do anything right. I could say a lot, but I'm not going to because I've probably said too much on this podcast already. And if I did start talking now, I'd talk for about 20 minutes on it because I've got a lot to say, but best not to do that. Right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to Decal Works. Thank you to Fox Racing. Thank you to Beta USA. We will not be here next week because there is a weekend off, but on the weekend off, there is an MXGP round, so there is some racing, at least, to keep you entertained. And then Foxborough will start the race to the checkered flag in 2024 Monster Energy Supercross. And you know what? We do indeed have a race, because 8 points is the difference between Jet Lawrence and Cooper Webb. And actually, I forgot to mention, this point last year, it was 7 points between Tomac and Webb. So very similar points-wise. And actually, final point, this point last year, Chase was further out than he is this year. Which,
really?
Yeah, I don't know what, like, I don't really know what you take from that, but it kind of made me go, like, I guess it just made me go, nothing's over. So yeah, there you go. Take that excitement forward with you. I've been your host, Lewis Phillips. That's been Michael Lindsay. We will see you real soon. Have a good week.